And I'd ask staff and members and audience to please silence your cell phones so that we don't have any distractions. And then we always like to begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So today we have a quorum, which consists of five members. And our voting members for today shall be Mr. Intermill, Mr. Carlson, Mr. Hannigan, Ms. Davies, and myself, the chair. We have one regular member. If he shows up before the testimony begins, I'll appoint him in lieu of one of our associate members. Otherwise, we'll just stay with these voting members. And we have no non-voting members today for now. And so the next item is report items from staff.
Mark Gebhardt, Development Services Department. Thank you for your attendance today. Again, a one-item day. We've been seeing those lately. The only report item is that we don't believe we'll necessarily have an October meeting because we don't have any applications in process, although we've had discussions with some folks for making applications. Any questions of me?
Questions for staff?
No, sir.
Thank you. Okay. Next item, then, we have two items today. One's a consent item, which is the approval of the minutes, and then a regular item. So let's just handle the minutes. Did all the members have an opportunity to review the minutes?
Yes.
And are there any changes?
No.
Seeing none, we will deem the minutes from the last meeting approved by consent, and we'll move. We don't have any unfinished business, and I know of no appeals from previous meetings, so the next item is regular item BOA-17-003, which is a dimensional variance for a Cox garage. For those in attendance, I just want to explain our process and how that works. We'll have the staff introduction of the topic, and then the applicant, Ms. Cox, will come up and make a presentation or say anything that she'd like to say. We'll have a staff assessment of that. We'll entertain any public comments for or against. I don't see any of those today, but if someone comes in, they'll have the opportunity. The applicant will have an opportunity for a couple extra words after that. And then we'll go through the board process of consideration and voting. So with that, I'll start with the staff introduction of the topic.
Nina Reese with Planning and Community Development for the Cox Garage request. This is a request to legalize the size of an accessory structure which exceeds two times the size of the home. Our team consists of myself and Tommy Hoff as the engineer. And now we'll have Lori Siegel go over the review criteria.
Good morning. I won't necessarily read these to you, but they're set forth on the slide in front of you, and it describes the authority under which you are acting today, which is allocated to you by statute and also described in the Land Development Code. And you may grant variances from the physical requirements of the code based upon an equitable consideration. Number one, you have to find that the burdens of strict compliance with that requirement significantly exceeds the benefits of compliance. You also must find one of the following: either that the variance provides only reasonable and temporary relief, that the variance includes an alternative plan that would mitigate the anticipated impacts or serve as a reasonable equivalent substitute for the current zoning requirements, or finally, you must find some other equitable or unique consideration that compels that strict compliance not be required in this particular case.
Any questions on that? All right, thank you.
So now at this time, I would like to ask the owner, Diane Cox, to come forward for her presentation.
And if I could get you to sign in, please. Thank you.
So, my name is Diane Cox, and I really don't know what I'm supposed to do here. So back in 2005, we purchased property, and at that time, we had a shop off of Powers that my husband was working out of, Cox's Restorations, where he restores classics and street rods. And we had seven of our own street rods, and at that time, we lived off of Nokomis and had a six-car detached garage. And we were getting broken into quite a bit, being off of Powers and Ford Street. So we thought it'd be best to perhaps look somewhere else and put up a shop so we could store our vehicles, our trailers, things that we had located at the shop. Purchased the property, found out which was in our error because we got with the realtor and that and said, hey, can we put a building on here? And at that time, we were told, yes, we could put a building on. Got with a builder, All Specialty Buildings, paid him to do everything. He was supposed to do the building permits, do everything for us, put the building up, and then back in 2008, I believe it was, we were turned in for having a shop there. Basically, I guess it was not zoned for a shop. But we were basically, at that time, my husband, with the economy dropping in that, we were just restoring vehicles for ourselves and selling them. Now, here a few months ago, one of our customers that we had years ago had lost their building that they were leasing. Helton Autos and Jim Morley had some vehicles, and they had three vehicles brought out to our property unannounced to us, and then made a phone call saying, hey, if you don't mind, can we just store them there for a few days until we can get them moved somewhere else? Well, at that time, someone turned us in, filed a complaint that we were running a business again. We called them, told them, hey, you got to get these off the property, and then that's when we got a notice as far as our structure was too big. At the time the structure was put up, it was put up as an agricultural barn because it was just a dirt floor that we had all of our cars stored in and our enclosed trailer stored in because it's a 6,000 square foot building. And then we were told, well, it's a footprint, which once again was our misunderstanding because we thought it was the total square footage of your house, not basically, I call it the roof line of your house. So that's where we're at now is they're saying the building's too big and, you know, so where do we go from there? It's like we're not an in and out. There's no in and out traffic. The place is beyond well maintained compared to some of the surrounding homes. We have the only thing we have stored outside of our shop is we have a stacker trailer because we have race car. So we have our tracker, our semi, basically our vehicles. Other than that, there's no vehicles. Plus we have ducks and chickens and.
Sure. Any questions for Ms. Cox?
So are you running a business there now?
We are not running a business there. My husband still restores vehicles for himself. That's kind of how he makes his living and that we sell. So we did a 1951 Ford truck that we restored, took to, and what we do is we restore them, take them to some of the shows, win trophies, and then sell them. Because most of the people that buy them, they're wanting show vehicles.
Is that no, not no, a hang on, hang on a second. Up is on. For the microphone for the board members, there's a new set of microphones. Sorry. Up is the on position.
Okay, okay.
And then down is the off position.
Got it.
Thank you for that tutorial.
Yeah, Mr. Emerald, please.
Is that not considered a business in your eyes?
Well, I don't really consider a business anymore. For me, I consider it more of a hobby because he's not advertising, you know, he's not advertising in papers or online or anywhere to have vehicles brought in. You know, we're finding junk vehicles. It's not like what you see on TV where you've got, I mean, that's, no.
But it's a financial gain.
Well, it's the only way he can, yeah, other than his Social Security.
So, if you can be recognized, are you finished, sir?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Ms. Davies?
Up is on, yeah.
They're definitely backwards.
What would you perceive the annual revenue being for restoring? Like, how much annually does he sell them for?
Well, that's just it. It's some years, I have two jobs. So, some years, it's basically, we're living off of what I'm making because it takes sometimes a year to 2 years to put these vehicles together for what you're trying to sell them for. So by the time you get done with all the costs and that, well, yeah, he may make 20 some thousand out of it, you know, but then like I said, he gets his Social Security on top of that.
How many cars a year does he restore?
One, sometimes one. This truck took, the truck that he did took over 2 years. You have to understand, he's had knee transplant, knee surgeries, his back. So it's not like he's physically in the best of shape to go out and find, this is all he's done pretty much most of his life, other than he had a carpet business years and years ago, and he was a carpet layer, so his physically he's not able to do other type of work.
Anything
Mr.
else?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hannigan.
Can you speak to other properties in the neighborhood and the relationship of, because what we're asked to do here is review the size of this mm-hmm. building. Can you speak to other accessory buildings in the neighborhood, in your immediate neighborhood, and the size of those relative to their houses, homes?
Yes, sir. When we first moved in that area, when it came to the size of the building, the only reason we even put up something that size was because in that area, it's a circle, most of the properties there have buildings that are pretty close that size, or they have two that are side by side that equal that, and then there's one who has one that's even larger than that, plus he has others on top, you know, that are next to his home, and they're all pretty much the same, I would say, size homes.
So your circumstance does not particularly stand out?
No, sir.
Is that a fair statement?
Yes, sir.
And are these other accessory buildings, do people use them for, I don't know the area, so I'm wondering if it's a horse area, if people have horses and they use them as barns, or is it an area where people are using them as you guys are using them for hobbies and stuff?
Most of the people there are some that have horses. However, they have a barn specifically for the horses next to their other building, and then their other building is like one is a wrestling coach, so his are were being used for wrestling, for training, and then we have others that have different types of businesses to where theirs is obvious because they have all kinds of, I want to say like different types of equipment and stuff that's stored outside, inside, but those are not actually used for agricultural purposes.
All right.
For animals.
So there's a mix. And,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Cox?
Yeah, I do.
Mr. Intermill.
So can you give us some background back in 2000 and I think it said six? No, 2007, April 9th. Who came to the county to get a site plan for the unit at that point? When it was denied, was that you or was that the contractor that you hired?
I brought it, the only thing I brought in was when all this was going on, I brought in the plans, the structural plans for the trusses and all that. After we got a notice saying that nothing had been filed for the zoning part of it.
That was probably and after you got the citation, correct?
Yes, sir. And that's when I got with the builder and said, hey, you were supposed to, because it's even included in your paperwork as far as all specialty, what they had charged and what their contract was for the building permit and all that. And at that time was when, after we got the violation, he said, well, you don't need this. This is an agricultural barn. So we were going back and forth, and then I brought the plans in, or the drawings, the blueprints. I brought those in, and at that time, across the hall, they took a look at them and then told me to come back over to zoning.
So is it your belief that on April 9th, 2007, that the contractor that you hired to build, they came here and was denied the site plan and did not tell you about that? That's what our packet says. Our packet basically says somebody came in here
right,
and it was denied. I'm trying to find out if it was you or if it was the contractor.
Because I got the soil, so the only thing that I remember doing was getting the soils reports and that, and I brought in a drawing. That's basically all I did, and then the rest was up to him.
But that was after you got the citation, what you did. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes. But see, he had the building up. He had the building up when we got the citation.
Okay.
Right.
Anything else?
Did you
Any
ever,
other questions?
I'm sorry.
Ms. Davies?
Did you ever receive the actual building permit from the contractor? Did you see?
No, because we were told everything had to, the zoning part had to be done before we could do anything with the building permit. So it's just kind of been back and forth because we've been back and forth to the, trying to get a hold of the all specialty and like I said, and then with the zoning thing, so it's just been kind of a back and forth thing. So we were told at this last one, do the zoning, do the permit, which is like we said, we're more than happy to do that, but got to get through the zoning before the permit.
So is the contractor still talking with you about this? Because
oh, absolutely not. He hasn't returned phone calls.
Unfortunately, I mean, you're the responsible entity because it's your
right.
property.
So, yeah.
But it seems to me like you should have something legal to be able to go back to him on.
Well, I would think with the contract, yes, since that contract was there.
Do you have that contract from the contractor? From the?
Actually, it was included in the... Include in your paperwork there.
I didn't see it.
It's not much of a. It just basically has what they.
Okay, I just presumed that was the court,
oh, no,
but that's not. Okay.
Okay.
Give me a second. Where is that contract? Is this, I'll spell check. Okay, I need to read this.
And there's one on the, there's one prior as well. Any other questions immediately from the board members? All right, Mr. Chair, I have a couple. The reason the questions are coming up, by the way, about the usage and the sales is not whether or not you're running a permit, because this is not about use. Mm-hmm. This is about a size variance, but the size variance applicability is to non-agricultural buildings. So if it's an agricultural building, I would think that if that were the case, we probably wouldn't be here. And so that's the reason for those questions about the use. I'm not trying to be intrusive, but you indicated, for example, that it had been put up as a barn, but I noticed in your letter you indicated that you had put it up specifically for these repairs. And so,
like I said, because it had the dirt floor and that in there, and then over time we started putting concrete, because our initial thing was to use it for storing our street rods and our trailer, things that we were basically off Powers of Valley and Powers.
Right.
When we had our shop, like I said, we were getting broken into, so those went in there. And then years ago I had wanted to do a dog rescue, because I do have dogs that I find and I keep and rescue them, and but the finances just weren't there to do that.
And I understand, but the nature of the construction doesn't determine its use as an agricultural facility.
Right.
And your letter says the main purpose of the pole barn, mm-hmm. regardless of how it was constructed, the main mm-hmm. purpose was for my husband's hobby of restoring hot rods.
Mm-hmm.
So you said in your letter that's the reason you built it. So it
right.
wasn't intended as an agricultural use. Is it used as agricultural now? You're still running the restoration out of that barn, though, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So going back to Mr. Intermill's question, I just have one quick question. When the application for the building permit was denied, did the contractor tell you that it was denied and then tell you you didn't need it, or did they tell you it was denied or not?
No, he didn't say, okay. He did not say it was denied.
Okay.
He just said that when I asked for the drawings and that, and it took quite a while to get the drawings,
right.
he kept telling me that you don't need these. You
okay.
really don't need them, but here they are.
Okay.
It's like, well, I believe I paid for them, and I would
right.
think, you know.
Okay. So the last thing I want to ask you about is there are two questions I have left for you. One is there are alternatives listed as a mandatory part of our consideration process, is to look at alternatives that might be considered. And there are three there. One is to tear it down completely. One would be to reduce the size of that barn so that it's compliant. And another is potentially to expand your dwelling unit so that it gets up to 3,000 square feet and then becomes large enough for the to put it in compliance. Can you talk to the feasibility of those for you? I mean, could you reduce the size of the barn to make it compliant, bring it down to 3,400 square feet, or expand the dwelling to make it large enough?
So you're saying add on to my house?
Well, there are three alternatives listed here. One of them would be if the residence was 3,000 square feet, then
mm-hmm.
the accessory structure would be in compliance because it wouldn't be larger than twice. So that's one option that's presented. Another one is reduce the size of the barn or tear it down completely. So can you talk to the options of those and feasibility? I mean, could you do any of those?
Well, no, because then you're talking cost-wise to expand your house, because the square footage of my house is over 3,000 right now, and if it's just my husband and I, you're talking more money.
Okay.
And then I don't see why you would tear down such a beautiful building, because it's not like an old barn, you know. It took pretty much most of our savings to put this up, and then you're saying tear it down when all of our neighbors have the same size, if not more, that are pretty well run down.
But they're not in here for right. this reason, so that they're most likely compliant. They got a permit.
Well, from what I understand...
Well, we can't go with hearsay. We just have to know the facts. And we just know that yours did not get a permit, so that's why we're trying to get this information from you. I would like to know, what neighbor was it, or do you know who put the complaint in?
I have no idea, because when I went around to get all the signatures to let them know about this hearing and that, my neighbors could not understand why someone would do that.
Okay. So what about reducing the size potentially?
Well, I don't know how, so you're saying take down how many square feet?
To bring it in compliance, I think it would bring it down to 3,300 square feet, 3,400 approximately.
What is it? Mr. Chairman?
3,328.
So I...
Just a second, please.
I don't know how... I just don't see...
Okay.
How we're hurting anything, how we're... Okay, I understand. Yes. All right, it was not approved by zoning, but I don't understand. It's been up for 10 years. And the only complaint was those three cars that were parked there, which, seriously, it was three cars that were parked out on our property.
Okay. I'm just trying to stick to the 6,000 square foot issue and what the alternatives might be. And then I have one more
question. Think it would just be sad to try and figure out how you would tear down some of this building.
Okay. And I have one more question, but I'll yield to Mr. Tucker here for a moment. Sorry. Carlson.
The applicant seemed to believe that her house was 3,000 feet or greater. Is that not the case? Or?
We can ask staff how the criteria are determined, because the staff report says it's about 1,600. So we'll ask staff when the time comes.
Okay.
Because according, and that was, like I said, my misunderstanding when I was told about it is I was thinking it was square footage of your house, you know, what you're living, bottom floor, top floor, but it's just, I call it the roof.
It's the envelope.
We'll put that question to staff and let them address it. I have, did you have any other?
No, thank you.
Okay. Then I have one more final question. One of the proposed conditions of approval is that if the variance is approved, mm-hmm. that there can be no commercial use of the property, which means the restoration has to stop.
Unless there's a
subsequent approved application for that.
Right.
Since you indicated in your letter that the primary intent of putting up the thing was to do that, and that condition, you understand, would prohibit that activity. Is that correct? You'd no longer be allowed to do that.
Well, from what I understand, he can do, how was it put to us? As
a hobby.
Yes, it would be, it is his hobby, is how it was put to us.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I have to apologize to everyone because I'm so used to going to the Planning Commission that I forgot that with the Board of Adjustment, staff actually is supposed to give their presentation first.
Yeah.
So I have to apologize to all of you. If you would like, I can probably answer a lot of these questions if you want to go back to the typical order.
That probably would be appropriate at this point. I think it'll answer a number of questions, particularly relative to timing and rules and interpretation, and then we'll have you back up. So we won't consider you're still have an opportunity to make presentation afterwards, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I apologize for that. That was a pretty bad mistake there. So first, I've written down several questions that you guys have. So I wanted to go through each one of those before going through my planned presentation. So the first question had to do with running a business. We have talked with the applicant about the activities that occur on site, and we have not been considering this a business because the vehicles are under their ownership and because it's maybe one car that's sold a year. If that, we don't consider it a business. So So if the request should be approved, the condition, the proposed condition, wouldn't have any impact upon their ability to repair what we're considering their own personal vehicles. Now, if that business were to be expanded in the future and they started selling multiple vehicles per year, or they started having other vehicles being brought to the property and we're charging for the repairs, then our decision obviously could be different. But the activities that are occurring on site currently are not considered a business.
In that case, could I ask a question about criteria then? Because Land Development Code says that the size restriction, or appears to say that the size restriction, doesn't apply to an agricultural structure.
Right. So that was another question that I have listed.
Okay.
So your question about, well, is this a barn or is this an accessory structure? So this is an ongoing issue, and we probably speak to at least one person, if not more, per day at the front counter and explain to them that just because you're calling it a barn doesn't mean that it's a barn. We actually have an agricultural permit, and in that permit we ask various questions to determine if this structure is being used for an agricultural purpose. So that would mean that you're putting animals in there. You're storing feed, things like that. It's not a garage. So even though you may be calling it that, and from the exterior it may appear as any other barn, from a zoning perspective and from a building permit perspective, it is not a barn, and you're not eligible to get the agricultural exemption. You're required to meet the standards for an accessory structure and obtain a building permit. So the other one that I've got, let me see, it has to do with the size. Mr. Hannigan, you had asked about the size of the surrounding structures. So I got the aerial from 2007, and so this was just after the new regulations were put in place. And you can see that all of the large accessory structures were in place at that time. So it's the size of structure is consistent with the area, I would say. But these larger structures that you're seeing were legally established before the Land Development Code was revised. And then for Ms. Davies, your question about the building permit. In order for somebody to obtain a building permit, they actually need to get zoning authorization. So because they don't meet the size requirement, even if they wanted to get a building permit for it today, they wouldn't be able to. So they're kind of stuck in limbo until the size is determined.
But we don't have any information on what occurred prior to building it with the permit. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, restate your question.
There's no record of the attempt to get the permit at the time of build or any information on what occurred prior to the building.
Correct. So what we do have on record is in 2007, there was a site plan that was denied because of size. We don't have any record of any attempts to legalize the structure since then. As far as applications go, they have come in for what we call an early assistance meeting on two different occasions, where staff has an opportunity to discuss with the applicants what's required, but there has been no application made. So that's correct.
So Nina, do we know who was the applicant in 2007 that came in and it was denied?
So all that we've got from 2007 is just the site plan with the denial and then the receipt that was associated with it. We don't really keep records to indicate exactly who came in at that time. The receipt, as far as who was making the payment, does say, it says Strain and Dad Construction LLC. So that's not the same name of the company that they're giving now, but maybe they were under a different name, different LLC. But it doesn't list Diane Cox as the person making the payment.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Hannigan.
Nina, can you, if I'm understanding this correctly, though, the building was built before the regulation changed to this two times the footprint of the house. Is that the case?
No, that is not the case. Let me go forward in my slides just a little bit and cover the background. So the house was built in 1996. The square footage, as far as the footprint goes, is 1,664 square feet. So we only count the footprint as far as the size of an accessory structure goes. The land development code was actually revised in 2006, October of 2006, but they did a delayed date for when those new regulations were going to be put in place. So the effective date of those changes was April 2nd of 2007. Now at that time, we actually didn't even give the two times larger allowance. It was just not larger than your home. And then the site plan for the garage was denied April 9th of 2007, so just after the regulations changed. A notice of violation was sent out December of 2007 for running the business and for the structure. That file was closed at a later date because in 2007, if it was more of a violation because a building permit wasn't obtained, we didn't pursue that violation. We left it up to Regional Building. That policy has since changed, and now we do enforce on if a building permit hasn't been obtained, obviously not on building code itself, but just obtaining a permit. And then a second notice of violation was sent December of 2016. Now, for your question about when was it built, we don't really know exactly when it was built, but we do know that we have an aerial from the summer 2007 that shows that the structure was not yet there. They had obviously started clearing the ground, but hadn't started construction. Ms. Cox may be able to tell us about exactly when that structure was built, but we don't have a date.
And so if I may, just to extend that, if the builder, the contractor who built the structure, didn't secure a building permit, obviously also didn't secure site plan approval, and didn't say anything to the Coxes, he just went ahead. That's certainly a possibility here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you, one other question, a follow-up. Can you speak to this idea of an accessory structure having two times the footprint of the primary structure? Where does why not 2.1? Where does that come from? Is there some basis to that? Or is it
Mark
just...
Mark was around when that change was made. I don't know. Did you process that, Mark?
I mean, does it have some, is there some connection?
Mark Gebhardt, Development Services. Prior to the 2006 Land Development Code approval,
right,
implementation in 2007, there was not an accessory building size limit.
Right, okay.
When, as a part of the revision to the code, going through a very extensive committee process,
right,
the issue of accessory buildings dominating a streetscape was a committee and a planning issue,
right,
that was addressed through the revision. The first code adoption said simply can't be larger. That posed some questions Board of Commissioners actually asked for a code revision to expand that. They felt that was too restrictive in the first version of the code they adopted, and I think it was within a year later that was amended or changed to become two times the size of the footprint of the house.
Okay.
Actually, that was in 2008, so it was a
little bit later,
almost 2 years later.
Okay.
Two was not magic based upon trends in the industry,
right,
or in the world. It's a perception of what would be normal in this area to have to continue to consider an accessory or secondary building related to size of house.
And then if I can take that just one step further, you could have an accessory building just slightly less than 2 times the footprint of the house, and a second accessory building just less than 2 times the footprint of the house, and...
You are correct.
And we could go on.
You are correct.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Let me see, since we've kind of gone out of order, let me just look through my slides here and see what I have missed so far.
Nina, have you got a picture of the unit as it is today? Right there, okay.
So this is from when the property was posted. Our code enforcement took this picture. So you can see the poster right here, and this is the accessory structure. Mr. Curry already covered the alternatives, so I don't know if there are any questions about those alternatives.
I have one, and that is, you've already said that the hobby, because it's so small, doesn't really qualify, isn't considered a business, mm-hmm. and the condition wouldn't prohibit that. And you talked about structures are not determined agricultural because of the questionnaire or the application. Was such an application made in this case?
No, it was not.
Okay, so would another alternative that's not listed in the package potentially be submittal and approval of a truthful application that led to a determination that it was agricultural, it would then be compliant, correct?
That is true. In order for them to successfully obtain an agricultural permit, there has to be an agricultural use on site,
right.
That's going to continue. We actually now record an affidavit so that not only the current property owner, but future owners are also limited to only using those structures for agricultural purposes. So it does limit the property quite a bit. Right. Compared to obtaining a building permit and calling it an accessory structure. But yes, if they were to have an agricultural use on the property, then they could obtain that permit and record that affidavit.
As I said, a truthful application.
Right.
So if there were a truthful application, that would be another alternative.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Do you have a picture of the property, the overview, as it states currently?
Mm-hmm. An aerial?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's see. You probably want to see that a little bit larger. So here's the home. Here's their driveway. And then here's the accessory structure. The accessory structure does meet all of the setback requirements, just not the size requirement. So that's the only request today is for the size.
Anything else from staff?
I'll just go over the conditions real fast.
Okay.
There are several conditions listed, and some of them are more of, because we're required to get a Board of Adjustment application to hearing within 45 days, we took this application to hearing with outstanding comments just on the application itself. So I'll explain those as we get to them. The first one is to obtain a building permit and a site plan for the garage, to legalize the garage. So number three has to do with just outstanding comments. So the applicant only provided one page of the application, so they would just have to upload both pages of the application. Fairly simple. There were several errors on the site plan that was submitted, so just making those revisions and resubmitting it so that we have an accurate site plan on file associated with the approval. And then the last one has to do with not using it for commercial purposes.
So I have a question on number two. That's not within control of the applicant. So the approval is not within the control of the applicant, right?
Staff approves it.
Approving the site plan?
The approval of the site plan and issuance of a building permit has to occur within 60 days. But that's not within control of the applicant.
So it's not. They have to go to our department and building to obtain those approvals. The site plan will be a no-brainer because
not worried about that part. I'm just saying the approval of the site plan has to be within 60 days. That's not in the control of the applicant. What happens if the building department can't get to it right away? There's not a priority summon. It's 90 days. What happens if that condition isn't met is what I'm going to say is the applicant is agreeing to all the conditions here other than that one, as far as I can tell. And I think we had an issue on the Planning Commission where we had to strike one of those because it wasn't in control of the applicant. What happens if that doesn't happen?
So we can certainly revise that condition to give the director the authority to give an extension if they have made an effort. I think the last one we were seeing a good faith effort was the wording. So absolutely, you can revise condition number two. I'm not aware that PPRBD is taking longer than probably a week or two to review plans at this time, but I understand what you're saying.
No, I'm just saying I think I'd probably be more comfortable with something that says that the applicant has to make a good faith effort to make these submittals so that the process could occur, if that makes any sense, to put it back under control of the applicant rather than the regional building department.
I would recommend keeping the 60 days, but then giving the director the authority to give an extension. That way, this has been ongoing since 2007.
I understand.
So if it continues to be ongoing, it's not just up to the applicant to determine when they think it's appropriate.
Let me rephrase the question. What does the applicant have to do to make that happen?
They have to submit for a site plan and a building permit.
Okay.
So, and then they have to meet all of the applicable regulations for site plan. We already know that if the dimensional variance is approved, no-brainer, but then they would have to meet the building code requirements as well.
Understood all that, but the applicant has to make a submittal.
Right.
Can we put the timing on the submittal? Does that make sense? Applicant must submit?
So if we put the timing just on the submittal, but they never fulfill that building permit and only apply for it, but Pikes Peak Regional Building has additional requirements in order to close that permit out, then they would technically be meeting that condition, but they wouldn't have fulfilled the building permit need. So I do think that it's important to say approval, but I would recommend if you want to give the ability to do extensions, maybe just add additional language that the PCD director can approve an extension of time.
I'll wait for board discussion. I think that something like that's probably appropriate, but we'll have a discussion. Go ahead.
That was all that I had, unless there are questions.
Any other questions for staff?
No? Is that the rest? Is that all of your
Mr.
presentation?
Mm-hmm.
We covered it all. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. All right, Ms. Cox, I had said you had an opportunity to come back up and continue your presentation if you'd like. Do you have anything else you'd like to present or discuss? If you could come up to the microphone, please. We record these, so thank you.
I was going to say one of your alternatives when you were talking about agriculture. So now, instead of your third option of tearing down so many square feet of the building, so what if that square footage was used for agriculture? In other words, I have chickens and I have ducks, that I have an outdoor enclosure. So could I use that instead of tearing down?
You'd have to discuss with staff what's in the agricultural permit process.
To where it would be both?
The only reason I asked the question is that they indicated that there's a permit process for getting a structure designated as agricultural.
Right.
And provided that was filled out truthfully and it really was being used for that,
right,
then the dimensional variance wouldn't be required here. So that's all. That was my only question to staff was, if in fact it was being used for agricultural purposes, and you were able to successfully submit that application, would that be an alternative to the variance? And that was my question was, and the answer was yes, if that were true. Did you have anything to add for staff?
I just wanted to make sure that Ms. Cox understands that that meant the entire structure has to be used for agricultural purposes forever.
Right.
You and future owners.
Oh, got it.
So, before you sit down.
But that was my question. Ms. Carlson?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll get you the question.
For staff, what happens if we don't approve this? What happens to the Coxes?
So if the request is denied, then the violation would remain open. So we would give them a new timeline to cure the violation. They would have to tear down. It would be one of those three alternatives. So tear down the structure, take off half of it, essentially, make an addition to their home. Or if they wanted to start using it agriculturally, that is their option. But it really would have to be for agricultural purposes forever.
Could they divide this building and accomplish? I just heard someone say that if you could build several structures of 3,000 feet if you wanted to, could they divide this building and accomplish that?
So if they successfully obtained a building permit from Pikes Peak Regional Building to put, I don't know, a 3-foot gap in the building and put up new walls or whatever it might take, then yes, that would be fine too. Because we have a maximum coverage, but you can have
Or it could be a wall that just penetrates the roof probably, one wall. Probably.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Could be just one wall that penetrates the roof line probably.
I don't believe that we would consider that two separate structures because that would be just like adding a room to one large building.
It would have to be detached.
Okay. So maybe that's a fourth option, I guess.
Any other questions?
I had the same thought.
Mr. Rindermull?
I had the same thought that if there was a way to detach it, it might avoid some costly expense.
Any other questions for staff or the applicant?
I do. Is the floor now? Yes. Is the floor now concrete, or is it still dirt?
The floor is now concrete.
Okay. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks. Any other questions? Thank you. Did you have anything further you wanted to present here?
No, sorry.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll deem the testimony section closed and begin the board discussion. So, I'd be interested. We're just going to have a discussion. And board members, do you have any comments or thoughts on the issue?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hannigan.
If I may. There are many times we get to a place like this where there's confusion about how things may have occurred. Nuts and bolts of it is there's a building on a lot in a neighborhood, and the building does not meet the standard. When I look at the aerial, it appears there are others that may have the same situation in the same neighborhood. If the building is not being used for commercial purposes, which is not the subject of this hearing, then its existence does not seem to be any detriment to the neighborhood. In fact, nobody's here to complain about it. We have one comment from one neighbor who has no problem with it. None of the possible solutions to the problem is a good solution. Asking someone to tear down half of a perfectly good and obviously suitable building is kind of a dumb thing for us to do. I see no problem with approving the variance as it is.
Thank you. Any other comments? Anyone else? Chair just has a couple. I'm concentrating on the size issue, and I think, of course, we wouldn't be here if it were being used strictly for agricultural. It sounds like it is partly. And I look at the other structures around. It's certainly not a compatibility issue, and I don't think it's there are any other issues. The only alternative that gives me pause is if the applicant, I agree that the three listed are probably infeasible.
Yeah.
The only one is the one that I thought of is if it actually was being used for agricultural purposes, but in that case we wouldn't be here. So there are obviously other reasons why, and I personally, I don't see any compatibility or other considerations. Although I must admit that I am somewhat reluctant at times to sanction bad behavior by subsequent approvals. But nonetheless, as I look at our criteria, the geography and topography are not issues, and we're under other equitable considerations and the hardship. And so we required both of those, and I think I could find for those. So with that, if there's any further discussion, okay, I'll simply comment that when we get ready to make a motion and take a vote, it requires an affirmative vote of four members to pass. And so those are the rules we go by. And so with that, the chair will entertain a motion.
Ms.
Seago.
Thank you. I just wanted to remind the members that if there is a motion to approve based upon a unique or equitable consideration, if the motion maker could please articulate for the record what that consideration is.
Thank you. And with that, the chair will entertain a motion that includes such equitable consideration. Anyone care to make a motion? Either for or against?
Do we have that slide with the conditions? Equitable.
Okay. Did you mean the considerations, can you pull up the consideration slide there? The equitable consideration. I think there's a geography and topography and something else as well. There you go. So we're required to find the first one, that strict compliance would be a hardship, and some other equitable consideration. No motions. Okay, the chair will make one just so we can get moving on.
Can you give us just a minute or two to read
certainly.
And think this through?
Certainly. Why don't we call, we've been here an hour anyway, well, I'm going to call a 5-minute recess. We can go to the restroom. Would 5 minutes be enough to allow you time to?
10.
Mr. Innerman? Will 5 minutes be long enough to?
10? 10 would be great.
10 minutes? 10-minute recess. in the board discussion to understand better what you may have read or any concerns you may have. Anybody have any discussion prior to a motion? Okay, with that, the chair will entertain a motion. Ms. Davies?
I move to approve the variance request as the offered alternatives do not provide an equitable consideration to the property owner that would offset the cost or loss to the owner.
Okay. We have a motion by Ms. Davies for approval. Given that the burden of the alternatives is unreasonable, do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Hannigan? So we have a motion for approval by Ms. Davies and a second by Mr. Hannigan. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, does that motion include the conditions of approval?
Yes, and Ms. Davies, I'll ask for the record, to that include the five conditions?
To include the conditions, yes.
To include them. Mr. Hannigan, your second also?
Yes.
For the record, then, we have a motion to approve file number BOA-17-003, dimensional variance for Cox Garage, in accordance with resolution number 3 with five conditions. Motion made by Ms. Davies and seconded by Mr. Hannigan. With that, the chair will entertain a vote. Mr. Intermill?
No.
Mr. Carlson?
Aye.
Mr. Hannigan?
Aye.
Ms. Davies?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. And with the four approvals, the variance is approved with the five conditions. Staff, do you have any other discussion or items before we adjourn? With that, we are adjourned.